You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Matt Walsh, Brian Wolfmiller, and Hans Feeney at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. All paid registrants will have the ability to watch the conference live and on demand. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The inequity was pretty glaring. I mean, even people on the left were kind of noticing it. They didn't want to call attention to it, but they were noticing it. People in the state of New York and in New York City being told that they could not gather for religious purposes, whether it's a synagogue, a church, wherever it might be, with certain restrictions there, pretty strict restrictions. Meanwhile, out in the streets, protesters are walking the streets close to one another, some of them social distancing, some of them not. And the same lawmakers who imposed the restrictions and kept them in place in the state and the city were praising the protesters while warning the religious not to gather. Well, a federal judge has required New York leaders to treat religious restrictions equally. Joining us to talk about that, Christopher Ferrara. He's special counsel for the Thomas More Society. Christopher, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
Tell us about this suit that was filed against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, the state's Attorney General Letitia James, and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
Well, the suit is a challenge to a whole system of regulations by way of executive order, which is unprecedented in the history of New York State, in the history of our country, really. It's an attempt to quarantine millions of people, the healthy along with the sick, by restricting when they may leave their homes, how many people may gather in different places, which businesses may open, which businesses may not open. We've never seen anything like it. And Cuomo himself admitted back in March that maybe it wasn't the best policy. So our challenge was pretty simple. If you're going to restrict the gatherings outdoors and indoors, you have to treat religion at least as well as you treat various businesses, nonprofits, and other indoor operations and outdoor operations. What was happening was, in this entire regulatory scheme, when you're talking about the indoor restrictions, only religion in this vast regulatory pyramid was consigned to 25% of the use of indoor space, which is crippling to Jewish synagogues and churches alike, who represent also Catholic priests in the northernmost part of the state, as well as three Orthodox Jewish practitioners in the lower end of the state. Outdoors, the gathering limits were 10 people only in the southern part of the state and 25 people in the northern part of the state. And the 25 people in the northern part was only a recent concession. Now, that's completely ridiculous for a couple of reasons. First of all, when you're talking about Jewish worship, there's a requirement of 10 men forming a quorum in Jewish worship known as the minyan. They have to be adult males, which is the equivalent of a Catholic priest having to be a male. Without that 10-person minimum, you can't conduct any kind of Jewish worship service, including Sabbath services, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, and weddings, so that it was literally the case that under the 10-person limit, you could not have congregational worship for Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn, where our plaintiffs reside. You could only have the minyan. And after the minyan, no one else could enter the synagogue. Where Catholics are concerned, the 10-person limitation was just as burdensome. It would mean that if you had a congregation of 200, you would have to have many, many masses on a Sunday instead of the usual one or two in order to accommodate the entire congregation. And so what was happening was that religion was being basically consigned to a kind of ghetto. And what changed it all for the better was the George Floyd demonstration. So what happened was tens of thousands of people in New York City and thousands in all the other major cities of New York State were protesting the death of George Floyd, marching in columns, inches away from each other, no social distancing whatsoever. They were also gathering in places like the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge, filling the entire span of the Brooklyn Bridge, and also in Cadman Plaza, where none other than Mayor de Blasio, without a mask, addressed thousands of people who couldn't have been packed more tightly together. So the double standard was obvious, and what it exposed was a couple of things. First of all, that religion was being treated unfairly. That's the obvious implication of this, because at the same time people were marching in Manhattan to protest the death of George Floyd, some Hasidic children were being kicked out of a playground in Brooklyn by the police, 10 or 11 children. So that's the obvious disparity. But something else has been demonstrated that's really more important for the future. It shows that the gathering limitations themselves are scientifically and medically suspect, because the governor wasn't too terribly concerned about transmission of the virus, and neither was the mayor when it came to these favored protests. So what happened to the entire public health rationale for trying to restrict millions of people? The healthy, who are the vast majority, along with a tiny minority who are sick, and by limiting their gatherings. It doesn't make any sense. They now reveal that they don't really care that much about transmission of the virus in public gatherings. And the whole concept of transmission of a virus by asymptomatic people is very dubious at best. The evidence for asymptomatic transmission by someone who's not coughing and sneezing is practically nil. So the judge, recognizing at least the disparity in the treatment of religion as compared to other gatherings, said that this can't be sustained under a constitutional analysis. And so he made two rulings. Indoor gatherings must be, for religion, the same as they are for businesses in phase two of Cuomo's reopening plan, which means at least 50% indoor occupancy. And when they move into phase three, the churches would move along with the other businesses into what we hope will soon be 100% occupancy. Outdoors, the judge said, look, there is no longer any outdoor gathering limitation. The governor and the mayor have destroyed that by not only allowing, but positively approving gatherings in the tens of thousands. So that gathering limitation for outdoor gatherings has been eliminated. The only requirement is social distancing. So basically, justice has been brought to this whole arrangement, and it consists simply in treating religion like other groups.
Mayor de Blasio, in particular, had some rather public run-ins with New York's Orthodox and Hasidic residents. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, it was really quite striking. The mayor of the city of New York tweeted out a threat to the Jewish community. He qualified it as to other communities, but it's obvious his target was the Jewish community, that he would not tolerate outdoor funeral gatherings and wedding gatherings, primarily in Brooklyn in the Orthodox community. At the same time, as he later revealed, he had no problem with tens of thousands marching for George Floyd. He went so far as to go to Williamsburg, the section of Brooklyn, to be sure that the New York Police Department dispersed a funeral gathering of Jews that was taking place on the street. Why on the street? Because the 10-person limitation for indoor gatherings, in effect at that time, made it impossible to use a funeral home. If you have someone who's beloved by many and they want to go to a wake or a funeral service indoors, there could be 20, 30, 40, 50, there could be hundreds of people. The gathering that he personally supervised the dispersion of was to honor the memory of a recently deceased, very prominent rabbi. He wanted to be sure that the police broke it up. So this is what we have in the city of New York. We have a mayor who threatens the Jewish community, sends the police and personally supervises the police when they're breaking up a funeral gathering of maybe a few hundred people. At the same time, he applauds and participates in mass gatherings of thousands for the causes that he favors. Well, that's just completely intolerable. And any rationale, as I said earlier, for public health has been annihilated by the conduct of the mayor and the governor themselves.
Why do you think that Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio restricted religious observance while inconsistently promoting and applauding public protests?
It's difficult to talk about motives. So the focus in the court for constitutional analysis is not so much on motives as on actions. So here's what happens. Let's assume the governor and the mayor had good reasons for treating religion differently. Let's just take them at their word. That this pseudo-scientific superstition that somehow religious gatherings are viral vectors that are very dangerous compared to other indoor activities. Let's assume it's true for purposes of argument. Okay, so now the problem is they made an exception. They made many exceptions, exceptions for this business, that business, but the decisive blow to their own rationale was the massive exception they made for these huge gatherings outdoors. So if you're going to make exceptions for good reasons, then you have to have a compelling reason under the case law for not making an exception for religion. If you favor secular activities that threaten the spread of a virus just as much or even more than religious activities, you need a compelling justification to continue restricting religious activities in a way that's more restrictive. They don't have it here. They were not able to show any real functional difference between, let us say, a restaurant at 50% capacity, which is now allowed in the northern part of the state, tables of 10 people eating while facing each other. They could show no real difference between that and an indoor gathering in a church where people are all facing in the same direction. Nobody's eating anything. They're not laughing and talking and spitting food in each other's faces. They just had no explanation for why they could not grant an exemption for religion for the same reasons they were granting exemptions for secular activities. And so the judge said, essentially, you have to be even-handed in the granting of exceptions. And that requires strict scrutiny by the court. What is strict scrutiny? Court scrutinizes and sees whether they've used the narrowest possible way to effectuate their interest. Well, when it comes to the spread of a virus, narrow tailoring means basically social distancing. If you can socially distance in businesses and operate at 50% or 100% capacity, then why can't you socially distance in a church at 50% or 100% of capacity? Just observe the same measures in a church as in a business. So that's what's required here, an even-handed application. You give an exception for one, you have to give an exception for the other. You can't distinguish based upon the purpose of a gathering. The Sixth Circuit case puts it very well when it says, when people gather indoors for whatever the activity is, the virus doesn't care about why they're indoors together. So to say, well, this is a religious gathering, we have to regulate it more tightly, is constitutionally suspect and really doesn't hold up to strict scrutiny. And that's what the court saw here.
Finally, then, what message does this court's ruling send to other governors and mayors around the United States?
Well, I wish it would send a message that they should, where these lockdowns are still rigidly in place, that they should be even-handed and not create special categories of restriction for religion. And there's one example, even before our decision, of a governor who recognized the handwriting on the wall. When the case was before the Supreme Court, coming out of Illinois, over Governor Pritzker's restrictions on religious gatherings, he had a 10-person limit. Pritzker suddenly decided that these restrictions, which were supposedly so necessary to save lives, weren't necessary after all. He abandoned them all while the Supreme Court was mulling over the case and turned them into suggestions instead of mandates, including the 10-person limit. It became just a suggestion that you could follow, which is why the Supreme Court did not grant an injunction against Pritzker's limitations. He mooted the case by turning them into mere suggestions. So that's one governor who got the message, and we're hoping other governors do. I haven't reviewed all the other lockdown regimes that remain. My focus is on New York and New Jersey. But there really is no rational justification for this, what I call an irrational prejudice against indoor religious gatherings or religious gatherings in general. So the time has come for equal treatment, assuming these lockdowns go on much longer. And also for the future, because I fear that the next time there's a viral pandemic, they're going to try to pull this again with these ridiculous arrays of restrictions on people's lives. So we need to start fighting back now so that when the next time comes, we'll have some precedents that defend us when they come to take our rights again.
Christopher Ferrara is special counsel for the Thomas More Society. We'll post a link to the Thomas More Society at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Christopher, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy about the gifts of Lutheran piety, the Bible, the Catechism, and the hymnal, and we'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. listener comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union serves the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with car and personal loans, mortgages, credit cards, checking and savings accounts. Lutheran FCU supports LCMS organizations with its Spotlight Ministry program, and Lutheran Federal Credit Union allows you to make purchases with Apple Pay, Google Pay, and Samsung Pay using your digital wallet. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Good for you, good for the church, Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.